James begins with talking about trials, and I could not get my notes to print. And I'm not a fan of Microsoft Word. And though, if you live in this world, you have to use Microsoft Word almost. But so I prefer Word Perfect. And the I don't know, there was something when they sent out those little patches that correct things. It goofed this one up a few years ago, and every once in a while you get into this. The printer definitions, you cannot get it changed off of something. So anyway, my page was on label, and there's nothing I can do to change it. And I was just printing out this little skinny strip, you know. And so finally I thought, oh, I could save it to Word and print it, and it actually works. So I have to be less critical of Word. So the Word does have some nice features. I discovered when I was had to do my dissertation in Word, but it's not as easy to operate. It's Word Perfect. Except when it prints labels. Well, in James, you know, he begins, you know, it's a, as to most or a lot of letters, I mean, there are some that are this way, but, you know, especially Paul's letters were very, by the titles, they're addressed to very specific places or people. And, you know, you just look at his titles, you know, Ephesians, Romans, and, you know, they're all addressed to churches at a city or to people, Titus and Timothy. But James is, you know, and some of the general epistles are this way, where they're not, you know, they carry the name of the author because they're addressed in a broader sense. You can't, you know, I mean, if we were going to follow the same kind of thing as Paul, this would be the, you know, you'd have to call this to the 12 tribes dispersed abroad. I mean, you know, it'd be kind of a long title. It does, you know, it's to an area, it's to a group, and so they have a little different sense there. But also because of that, it's broader in some of its topics. It's not looking at, you know, especially at Corinthians. If you know, 2 Corinthians. Paul is addressing issues that have been raised, because he'll go along and say, now concerning, you know, they've raised this question. He's responding to those questions, or at 1 Corinthians, I should say. But anyway, this one begins with, you know, really well-known verses as far as the concept is well-known. How well-known it is in terms of us actually practicing it, that's another issue. But it says, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. you know, James is one of those, and this passage is one of those that you really have to wonder, do you really want to study it, read it? It often seems like, I don't know if actually they increase, maybe it's just the awareness is there. But that concept. I had a friend once, and we were they had bought a car, and used car, and his in-laws lived in Fort Worth. And they went to Fort Worth while we were in Brenham, and then on the way back, it broke down. You know, they just had it a couple of weeks, and it breaks down. And something to, you know, it was pretty serious. I can't remember what it was, but they had to, you know, do some major things. So they had, you know, where they had the valve covers off, at least, you know, all the valves. And so I assume they had to take all the heads off and so forth. But anyway, so I go with David to pick it up I think it was a Sunday afternoon. And after church, we drove up there. It was a couple of hours to drive there. And got it. And he drove about 3 miles. And there's all this noise. And, you know, I had to turn around and go back to this guy. And it was, I forgot what it was, what kind of a car it was. But anyway, this guy didn't really have the right tools to, you know, to tighten the valves or something. He didn't get them tightened anyway. As soon as I started driving in, they just all started coming loose and all the clattering was going on. So I had to leave it and go back. And I remember David saying, well, I wished I knew what the, I wished I would hurry up and learn what the Lord is trying to teach me so I could move on, you know. And sometimes we feel that way. You know, it's like, well, I wish I could learn whatever it is and I could get out of these problems. But really, while we can identify that, in one sense, that's really to miss the whole issue. You never get out of them. Rob and I went to a program at Dallas Seminary called LEAD, which stands for Leadership, Evaluation, and Development. And when we got there, there's like five couples that go to these. It's a week long, very intense. You have to do a lot of preparation stuff where you go. But when we got there, the very first thing we did is they had rented this little kind of tea house or something. We went to this little restaurant, and we were the only ones there. And they put a couple at each, you know, these tables scattered around. And the five professors that were going to be working with us moved from table to table. You know, we didn't move, they moved. And when they came, what they did is they told us what issue they were struggling with, what was going on in their life. And their point was, everybody struggles. And because that whole week was going to be focused on our struggles, but their point was, everybody struggles. And sometimes we, you know, I think we do fall into the idea that testing is for the purpose of making us, you know, better Christians or stronger or in your faith, however you want to say that. In a sense of that, we, you know, if we can just get past this, then we'll be accomplished and we won't have any more. And, you know, and that's not what, you know, they're always going to be testing. Now, one of the challenges with trials, and we can talk about it later a little bit, but is what's an issue to you may not seem that significant to somebody else for a couple of reasons, you know. you know, relatively speaking, things can be different. They're just not that big of a deal if you really thought of them in terms of, you know, I'm in pain, you know, but if you compared it to somebody else that's in pain, it may be a lot different. But also in terms of, we go through things and for a variety of reasons, personality, various things, they affect us differently. And then also because of where we're at in life, you know, I may say, oh, well, that's, you know, I dealt with that when I was, you know, 30 years old. You know, you're still struggling with that. And which can be, you know, this kind of condemning statement. But, you know, at the same time, we went through all the list. You'd be like, oh, you're still struggling with that. I got, you know, we're, it's not like there's a stepping stone. You know, you deal with this, then you move to this. And that's what we want Christianity to be. You know, that's what sells in our society. You know, the five keys to this, the three steps to that. You know, those, you know, that's why those titles are popular. That's why preachers tend to use those topics, because that's what we, you know, move for. We want everything to be that stair step or keys, or, you know, that it all works in order. And I don't see that scripturally, that there's an order per se. You know, even if we said, you know, if we could come up with, here's 10 things that you, quote, have to accomplish to be, you know, the accomplished Christian, which I don't think there are. But if there were, I don't think biblically it wouldn't be 10 things that go in a row for each and one of us. It would be different, and that would make it, you know, much more of the challenges that we see. But he says, you know, consider it joy. So the question is, what is joy? Well, the English dictionary, the Webster, says of joy, an emotion evoked by well-being, success, or good fortune, or by the prospect of possessing what one desires. And I think that's where, you know, when you think of joy, joy becomes that sense of happiness in English. It means, you know, things are good. I'm joyful because I won the lottery. I'm joyful because I bought a new car. I mean, joy means good fortunes in English. And so it makes, when we bring that definition into the Bible, it makes it very difficult. Because that would be, you know, it's not what the word means. Some commentators on James define joy as one of the eschatological, or that is the future joy of those expecting the intervention of God in the end of the age. So joy in that sense is saying it's this expectation, this confidence that God is going to intervene. You know, so you're looking forward. God is going to, and so you can have joy. Another one says, pleasure is not synonymous with joy. In Christian, joy is a king of activity. Christian joy is a man's pleasure in his progress and his brother's. You know, you can share it. Progress toward Christian salvation, and it is not undiluted pleasure. So he's, you know, can't be identified with pleasure, but it is that sense of moving forward. Gene Getz says, the joy James is writing about involves the ability to look beyond the problem or difficulty we're experiencing and see the opportunity to become more like Jesus Christ. You know, the ability to look beyond the issue that we're experiencing and look at the opportunity to become more like Christ. Paul uses joy in a variety of ways. I know last year I talked about love in this capacity that I had been significantly influenced of to define biblical love as that, you know, seeking the best in another, you know, the greatest good in another one, and it has this idea of volitional decision and sacrificial, and I think that fits a lot of places in the Bible on love, but it doesn't fit them all. And I think sometimes we, you know, some of us have been exposed to teaching that gets real absolute dogmatic, says this is it, and it's easy to do joy that way, say this is joy. But here's some of the uses that Paul, you know, Paul speaks in Philippians 1:25, the joy of faith. The fruit of the Spirit is considered joy. The kingdom is joy. Joy and hope are related. The opposite of joy is affliction in Romans. Joy actualizes freedom and takes shape in fellowship. Joy wants to, Paul wants to come, you know, to the Romans with joy. Joy is reciprocal. There's that sense of, you know, mutually experiencing joy. Joy is to be in God. Joy is in the Lord. Joy can have a future sense. The church will be Paul's joy. The mood of the Philippians, the letter of Philippians, is one of joy. There's joy at the preaching of Christ. It is future joy. It is future joy experienced as joy in the present in Philippians. As the joy of faith, it includes readiness for martyrdom. This joy maintained itself in the face of affliction. Paul himself, like the Lord, you know, puts himself as an example of joy. Paul's apostolic authority works for the joy of the church. He rejoices in his own weakness when it means the church's strength. You know, so joy, biblically, you know, its usage is pretty broad in that regard. It'd be real hard to say this is joy. You know, I mean, some of the definitions, and it'll probably come up here in a moment, that I really like with joy is that sense of a settled confidence and that God is in charge. You know, joy is that attitude that allows me to have that calm or that peace because I know God's in charge. Well, I think that kind of a definition fits at places, but it doesn't fit all those places that Paul just talked about. You know, I think one of the things that I was influenced by was removing emotion from the Bible. And so we define love, we define these things where it's not dependent upon emotion. It's all volitional. It's all, you know, this confidence, this faith issue. And there are a lot of places those fit. There's a lot of places where love fits very much that way. But there's also, when you look at some of them, there's that aspect of joy being something like pleasure and happiness, being some sense of an emotion. So we have to look at the passages and as we're looking at that. But when you look at this passage, consider it all joy, I don't think that would be one that would be... you know, we'd readily say, oh yeah, this is because, you know, you're happy because good things are going on. This is exactly what you wanted. That didn't fit the passage at all. And so I think in that regard, some of these kind of definitions fit. It is the fruit of the Spirit produced in the life of the completely devoted follower of Christ. Joy is a matter of attitude that stems from one's confidence in God, that He is at work, that He is in full control, that He is in the midst of whatever has happened, is happening, and will happen. That's Swindoll. An attitude that views life with all of its ups and downs calmly. It is a confident way of looking at life because of one's keen awareness of and trust in the living Lord Jesus. The joy James is writing about involves the ability to look beyond the problem or difficulty we're experiencing and see the opportunity to become more like Christ. That's Getz. We had something similar a while ago by Getz. Joy is an understanding of existence that encompasses both elation and depression, that can accept with creative submission events which bring delight or dismay, because joy allows one to see beyond any particular event to the sovereign Lord who stands above all events and ultimately has control over them. Now that's a kind of a lengthy one to kind of remember as a definition, but I think is a very well-worded one, and that fits the concept within James. Joy is an activity which has nothing to do with one's circumstances and everything to do with one's relationship to the Lord Jesus Christ. Joy is not the self-satisfied delight that everything is going our way, but the settled peace that arises from making the gospel the focus of life and from understanding that God is able to advance the gospel under the most difficult circumstances. Joy is a way of viewing life when the now is pain-filled, outcomes are uncertain, and others don't understand. Now, see, that definition, you know, clearly is there's an absence of emotions there, because the emotions would be screaming the other. You know, when life is pain-filled, outcomes are uncertain, that's when you have fears, and others don't understand. I mean, you're all alone. But joy, you know, is that confidence. And I think James is writing about that type of a joy. Joy is a deep, settled confidence that a loving Heavenly Father is in control of the details of my life. Joy is an inner contentment which springs from trusting God even when your circumstances are not what you would have them to be. And I think that's exactly what's saying here. Consider it all joy when you encounter various trials. Joy is an inner contentment that springs from trusting God even when your circumstances are not what you would have them to be. Well, what does it mean to consider it all joy? Well, it could be, the all could be in the sense of degree, the highest degree, you know, so consider it all joy, the highest degree of joy, or it could be undiluted, that is pure. And the NIV translates that way, it's pure joy. And I don't know that there's a whole lot of difference in those ultimately. One would be the highest degree, the top joy that you could have. The other one's, you know, a pure joy. So I'm not sure that you end up with a great difference there.
Should we know that it's modifying joy and not it?
That's a good question. Yeah. Yeah, it'd have to be, because there wouldn't be any way to. I don't know how you'd modify the other. There probably isn't a word there.
Consider all of it joy.
All of it. I see what you're. There probably isn't a word for it there. It's probably consider all joy. But I see what you're saying.
Or, you know,
the whole concept. Consider the whole concept.
Yeah, consider
it.
All.
That's an interesting. I don't know. I don't think so, but that's an interesting observation. And then he's saying to consider. We're to consider. You know, because of what's going to go on, it's talking about trials. Consider the trials as pure joy or the highest form of joy. To consider. Well, to consider really is very much like we use the word to consider. It means to think, to regard. It's that logical, that faction, that think about it, to analyze, to look at it. That's what it's saying. You know, I mean, make a deduction. You know, we're looking at this, and our deduction is, hey, this is pure joy, or this is the highest form of joy. Well, that obviously isn't something that comes natural to us, and there has to, that's contrary to what even makes sense to us. So there would have to be a reason for it. That, you know, how is that? You know, why would I do that? How's that, you know, before you get to how is that possible, it would even be, you know, why would I do that? And that's kind of where it moves at this point. But yet it's, you know, when, you know, consider it all joy, my brother, when you encounter various trials. So what's a trial? There's, the word can mean temptation. It can be a temptation, or it can be the sense of a test. Temptation doesn't fit the context here. But the idea of testing or trials of daily life. So then the question would become, though, is it talking about, because Paul does at times, another passage talk about trials that come on you because you're a Christian. I mean, these are the things that happen to you because you're a Christian. You know, the idea of being persecuted for your faith. I remember we had a relative once that was saying that he was being persecuted for his faith. And I just, you know, want to go, no, you're being persecuted because you're weird. You get on people's nerves, you know. It has nothing to do with that you're a Christian. But there is that sense of being persecuted because you're a Christian. And so, you know, you look at that, but that doesn't seem to be the context here. It seems to be that it's not just talking about the trials that come into your life because you're a Christian, but also to include the difficulties that are common to all people. You know, I mean, even if you're not a Christian, you know, Christians and non-Christians, you know, experience difficulties. Christians can experience additional difficulties in the sense of persecution, but everybody is, you know, has calamities. And that's, I think, you know, very definitely what's here. It's, you know, in that sense of life challenges. That is, challenges that present themselves simply because you're alive. You know, if you're alive, there are going to be these challenges. And the challenges, you know, are very, multicolored, you know, I mean, in that sense, you know, think of Joseph's multicolored, you know, robe. I mean, they can come in any form or fashion. And I think what's so interesting, you know, in that terms of trials is that you just don't know. You don't know what other people are going through per se. And you look at somebody's life and you go, I wished I, you know, had that. And yeah, we'd like, you know, some of the things they have or some of the awards they've gotten or some of the abilities, but you don't know what other things they're going through. And I don't know, you know, I mean, I don't know, obviously, you know, I don't know Michael Jordan. I don't know much about Michael Jordan. He's been a lot of people think he's gotten a real break from the press over the years, that they've just avoided saying anything negative about him. Not that there was a great deal to say negative, I don't think, but, you know, some of the things that were brought out by other people, they just ignore it with Jordan. And and I didn't see it, but his acceptance speech into the Basketball Hall of Fame over the weekend, I've heard people talk about it, and a writer that wrote on it just talked, you know, about the lack of grace, and that those that knew Jordan said that was just Jordan being Jordan, and that he was fighting these battles that are 20 and 30 years old. You know, made a negative comment about his high school coach, the well-known story that when he's a sophomore, he didn't make the varsity, and so he still, you know, those kinds of things. And you're sitting there going, so is part of the reason this guy was so great is that it was just always about proving to people that he's superior. And you're sitting there, okay, I would like to have his money, I would like to have his fame, I'd like to have his skills, et cetera, et cetera. Do I want that? No. So, and I don't know. I don't know Michael Jordan. I'm not trying to make any pronouncements on him. I'm just saying, you had that Herschel Walker, who was just this incredible athlete, you know, in college, and he got kind of caught up in that weird World Football League, and he went there, and then he went to the Cowboys, and then the Vikings traded everything they had to get him, and the coach said he didn't want him, and he wasn't going to play him, and the coach didn't play him, and you know, he ended up with really not having a well-known NFL career because of just weird things that happened to him. And he ended up back in Dallas and did well. And he was, at the end of his career, and he was involved in the a ballet in Dallas. It's not the kinds of things you would think that a football player does. And then he was on the Olympic bobsled team. And, you know, this guy is just this incredible athlete. Well, a couple of years ago or last year, he wrote a book. And I don't know how I feel about this part of it, but, you know, basically ends up with this. He's got these split personalities. And, but what, you know, what he ends up saying into this is that these personalities would come along and they would cause him to overcompensate for areas, and he would excel at it. And he would do real poor in school at a period, and so then all of a sudden became like an A student, and this regimen he had where he'd do like 1,000 sit-ups every day and stuff like that. I mean, he was just driven by all these things. And so you sit there, and you know, on the one hand you admire these people because you say, man, what dedication. Then on the other hand, at some point you find out it's not that. They're dealing with issues. Now, those are the celebrities that we hear about. And maybe ours isn't, you know, life isn't that imbalanced. Maybe it is that imbalanced. But the point is, we all deal with things. And then those are not typical trials. I mean, I'm saying, you know, that's not your muffler falling off. That's some other issue. But you know, trials are across the board, and you cannot see somebody else's trial per se. Now, obviously, we saw Belinda's when she's walking around her camouflaged cast that wasn't all that camouflaged. And it would have been good if she was in the forest, but didn't do her much good here, you know. In her living room, it was pretty obvious. And, you know, we know she's undergoing a trial. But as we sit in here tonight, we don't necessarily know that anybody's undergoing any difficulties. But that's what the word means. It's this idea of a test, a trial. And so then the question, like, how do you know a trial when you see one? And that's, I remember thinking, I can deal with trials, because I saw trials as those big things. You know, of course, that's when you're 25 and you're okay. If I find out I have cancer, I'll be able to handle that. You know, I don't know about handle it very well now, but you know, when you're 25 and it's like, oh, it's way, way out there. But it's the big things, and often we are able to handle the big things, and some of our experience tells us we're able to handle the big things. But trials are all those things, not just the big things. You come home and somebody's broken into your house. You have a flat tire. That same guy I was talking for, David, same guy I was talking about earlier that we went to get his car one time after church on this passage. I went with him somewhere, and they were coming to our house, and we went across the railroad track, and his muffler got caught on the track and ripped his muffler off, you know. So I mean, you know, those are trials, and it's not just the big things. And and probably the big thing here is that it doesn't say if but when. It's not saying if a trial comes in your life, but when. The word means exactly that, whenever, when. It refers to an action that is conditional, possible, and in many instances repeated. That's what the dictionary says, the Greek dictionary. So it's when they occur. Encounter means to fall in with, or to fall into. You remember the Good Samaritan. You know, he fell into the thieves, or however that is worded there, but they, you know, fell among the robbers. That's the word here. It's used of a ship striking a reef, that the ship encountered the reef. That is, you know, it encountered it. And so here it's used not in that literal sense, but figuratively, that it's, you know, we are involved in. You know, it comes into our life. It's not that you're out looking for it. It comes upon you. The various, you know, it's diversified. There, you know, we don't, you know, can't define a trial as physical illness. Can't define a trial as financial. Can't define trials as, you know, the political, you know, nonsense you have to listen to and deal with. Trials are a variety of things. They're all these different things. And so then it says that, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith. So is the testing of your faith, is that a synonym for trial? What do you think? Is that the same thing?
Going back to the joy or the trials, it's a Christian trial, not just an everyday trial. Because everyday trials test our faith.
Well, see, that's a, and there's a, you know, there's definitely something to that, the use of that qualification. You know, I mean, there's a, and there are several places in the Bible that specifically, you know, talks about the sense of persecution and that, you know, testing because you're a Christian. It doesn't have to do with you know, that because you're alive, you know, because you're living. And but here, you know, it does say, you know, that the testing of your faith. And I guess that's that question is that trials, you know, it can be a test of your faith. And I, you know, and I definitely understand. I mean, there is a total difference of being persecuted for your faith. And relatively few of us have really experienced much of that. And you can, but, you know, I wouldn't think any of us here have experienced it greatly in the United States. Now, people can. And, you know, I've known people that, or heard of people that were, you know, they're denied their degrees, you know, when they get, they go in for their oral presentation on their doctorate in biology, and somebody knows they're a Christian, they get into this, you know, evolution, and they're, you know, they're not able to get it, you know. So you have those kinds of things, and there's other things when people take a stand for things. But I think the whole concept of that when we experience things, that it becomes a testing of our faith. It becomes a, both for how are we going to relate to the Lord, and, you know, and it obviously becomes a, which this passage is not about, but a testimony to others as they evaluate that. To whether or not you're going to be handled the big things.
Yeah.
There was, and I think there is, you know, this is definitely off the subject of specifically, It is about joy. I remember, you know, many years ago, coming to realize, and I don't want to push this too far, but I think it's still generally true. I've been my observation that when you meet someone that really, you know, that you'd classify as a, you know, this joyful person, that they have had traumatic things happen in their life. And when you find somebody that's real bitter, they've had traumatic things happen in their life. And it's not the traumatic things, but it's how you respond. And so here I was, you know, 30 years old, and I started observing this because I, you know, you'd encounter, you know, somebody that was probably my age now, you know, this old person, and that ancient person, and they were really happy, you know, real joyful, and you get talking to them, and you find out they had this and they had this and they had this, and you're like, gosh. And then we met this lady. By the time we had encountered her, you know, who knows how many people had encountered this lady, and still know her name, Mrs. Allsgood, and interesting name too. She just drove people away. I mean, you could not befriend her, you could not be nice to her for very long, because she just drove people away. And anyway, our church got involved for a while, and like I said, I'm sure we were the 50th church, you know, and she was so bitter, and she'd had a lot of tough things. I mean, her husband was hit by a car on the way, walking on the way to the wedding, and they, you know, he just was evidently physically pretty much destroyed, and they went ahead and got married. You know, I assume not that day, but. And, you know, but it was just, that was just one of the many, many things. And she was just real bitter. Well, you know, I mean, that happens to people whether they're Christian or not Christian. And,
why did they choose patience? I mean, why not? Your child is suffering.
It's going on here?
Well, just produces patience.
Yeah.
And there's so many other things.
Yeah, yeah. I heard a speaker, I can't even remember his name now, but he was talking about that idea of patience, and somebody said, you know, never pray for patience, you know. But anyway, he was in seminary, and he prayed for patience, and he went through this long list, you know, having this car that was just all kind of perfect, and the Lord really, you know, convicting them not to be so selfish about things. Anyway, this car ends up just kind of getting destroyed with people, and just on and on and on. And somebody else, I heard, you know, some prayed for that, and his dorm room burned down. You know, just, but.
That may have a good point on that. Ask God to teach you patience. It's kind of rough. Just ask Him to give it to you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think that's the way He gives it to you. That's the problem. He doesn't just give it to you. But anyway, I think that sense of faith, you know, my stories, which didn't have anything directly to do with this, of the person that's bitter, the person that's joyful, I think it goes back to what Wayne was saying, that you don't just get there. You don't just wake up when you're 80 and you're a bitter person or you're a joyful person. And that's what I realized when I was 30, and I'm not sure I'm doing very well on it. But you get there by how do you respond, you know, when you're 30. How do you respond when you're 35? It's not just there.
I don't know about Mrs. Allsgood. Is that her name?
Yeah.
But I do know something about Mr. Allsgood. He didn't pay much attention to the leading of the Lord. I mean, if you're walking here,
don't get married, huh? Louder than that. Talking about closing the door, that one was. Yeah. He tried to make it as obvious as he could, huh?
The Lord's up there going. Faith. My question about faith is that my ability, my capacity to trust, is that the faith?
I think so. I don't, you know, there's two possibilities, obviously. It's,
or is it my belief?
It could be our belief system, our convictions, you know, basically, you know, our, the content of faith, you know, the Bible, the content of faith. But I don't think it's the testing of the content of faith, though in a degree that's there because it has to do with, I mean, obviously, it's that content is always there if you're being tested because it's, do you trust in God? Do you believe that God's going to fulfill His promises? But I think it's that personal sense of that application of it.
I tend to think that, and maybe I'm too far out there.
Can we vote afterwards?
You can vote now. Because if I went to a prayer meeting 2,000 years ago and a man walked in with a limp and asked him where he got it, he said, "Well, I was in a meeting and this guy Saul came in and he arrested a bunch of us Christians and I was beaten with the intent of getting me to deny my faith and I carried this." That's a tribulation. That's a trial. That's, you know, and I look at this stuff that I've gone through, and although it's, some of it's been tough, I wonder if that's really a trial. You know, if that's really an affliction.
Well, but in the one sense, and I understand what you're saying, the, you know, with all of these, regardless of how we define it, whatever it is, in that, if you want to say that, the end result of it, if you process this correctly, becomes a positive in your life. So in that regard, you know, if you move to that way, in reflection, it would be hard to look back and say, "Oh, that was a horrible trial," right, because of the result. No.
Is having your life put right on the edge for the faith. And that's why I wonder, is this speaking of?
Yeah, is it just general trials that include that, or is it specific to those?
General faith, my ability to trust, or is it something that rises to the level of me wondering whether or not there really is a God?
Right.
You know? But there are people who lose people who completely turn away from faith.
Yeah, that
goes back, you know, to the same sun that melts or softens the wax, hardens the clay, and, you know, the same circumstance with one person brings them, you know, they just run to God, and another one gets better forever.
Yeah, it's hard, see, and that's why it's so hard to qualify that, you know, when my mother died in February of the year we moved here, and I believe it was that following Christmas. Get my times off. Anyway, it was in the same year. It may have been 2 years after we'd been here, 2 years. But then our collie died on Christmas morning. And yeah, I can tell you which one's the most painful. It was my dog dying. It was far more painful. Which, you know, really, you had to deal with issues of like, is it more significant? Can't be. Is it da da da? And it finally led me to think through some things of my own, you know, kind of where I've developed some things is that I think, you know, those things that interrupt your daily life create more pain. Not necessarily more significance, more pain. I thought about this with Belinda and Eric with, and, you know, I'm not trying to minimize, you know, something I don't know, but if Coleman had been in college,
you know, I've thought that 100 times.
The distance, you know, not living at home, but let's say he, you know, went off to, you know, wherever, Oregon to college, and you're talking to each other, you know, once every 3 months, the impact of his death, wouldn't it have been the same because of where he was at? You were in, strangely, with our technology today, that's used to being when you never had any contact. You were actually in a lot of contact with him. Now, the significance of losing a son is going to be the same either way, but I think that immediate pain would have been different. Because, you know, you're at that point of like, well, I'm used to reading these emails. I'm used to getting this call. I think that, you know, when we look at that, those pains become difficult to say how, you know, different. And so for my mom, it became, you know, when I really missed my mom is when my dog died, because I knew she would understand. And it's been those periodic times that I want to call her and tell her things. That's when, because that was my routine. I didn't call her daily. And so I had a friend when I first became a pastor. There's these issues, you know, things going on, and so I called this guy that is another church, but they'd been real instrumental in starting that church in Brenham. And so I called Ron, and I'm kind of expressing these things, and all of a sudden I realized who I was talking to. Well, Ron's wife had brain surgery, and then about a year later she had a major stroke, and she was, you know, I mean, she was confined to a wheelchair, you know, pretty much, you know, progressively more and more an invalid, hard to get around. And monthly, they would go to the emergency room in a life and death situation. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm talking about, and everything seems so petty. You know, and I remember Ron saying, pain is pain. And that's what I would, you know, look at this. I mean, you know, if I look at what I'm experiencing compared to what he's experiencing, they don't compare, but it doesn't change the fact that I hurt. And so I think the trials are something like that, too. That, you know, it may not be a big trial. And some of the big things may not be big because we have such confidence. Death may not be a big issue because we have such confidence. But another Christian talking about you may be devastating because Christians shouldn't do that. You know, I don't know. You know, so I think those are that area. I think it does include everything, though I can, very definitely say there's lots of places in the Bible it's clearly talking about only persecution. But
it doesn't necessarily stand to reason that people who aren't believers go through the same trials that he's referring to here. You know?
Right, they just don't have a basis.
Your parents die, or
yeah. Right, because there, and that's where it comes. Yeah, because it comes back and saying that the testing of your faith, and so the testing, I think the testing of faith is that personal response. You know, it's going to be connected to the content, but it's not just simply the content. And it says it produces endurance, and the word produce means to bring about, to create. And then, you know, that sense of endurance, you know, as Belinda was saying, is patience, you know, fortitude, or some people like steadfastness, you know, perseverance. So I don't know if patience, sometimes patience, if you understand biblically, it's a good word, but patience in the sense of just, kind of you put up with is not really the concept. It's, you know, that's why I think the steadfastness is a very good translation. You know, that sense of perseverance, you know, stick-to-itness, it allows you to stay, to be there. But the whole thing then goes back, you know, consider, why are you going to consider it all joy in those two verses? What's the key word after that? You're going to consider it all joy. Why? Because you know, is that belief, that confidence in the word know, is just simply know or come to know. And I think it's going to have to be somewhat experiential there. But because you know, then you know you have this confidence, this belief, but it's not just simply factual. I think there's got to be some experiential there. You've seen the results that the testing of your faith produces you know, a greater capacity. And then it just keeps building as we go on through this.
Produces opportunity.
Mm-hmm. That would be true, too. So, you know, it's not just, you know, consider it joy because God's told you to, or that's the good Christian thing to do, or, but, you know, because it's going to do this, it gives you a real pragmatic aspect, but you have to have a confidence, you have to know, you have to, you know, that's the connection. You got to consider it, which is, you know, you think about it, you make a decision, but it's based on something like it. So this isn't really a blind leap. It's a confidence issue. It's a knowing. It's an experiential thing. And I think that's where it goes back, and I would agree with what Wynn was saying, was really good, is the little things. Because if you only see it as the big things, then it's all, for the most part, it's always future. But if you start to see, okay, I did experience in this, and, you know, and you start to see some of the things you know how God is able, you know, how God does work, not necessarily able, but because this is talking about does work, and that's where I don't do well. See, I do well when I identify trials. I'm just horrible at identifying trials, because trials still in my mind are big things, and I don't do well immediately saying, "Oh, that's a trial. How am I going to respond?" So.
Can you go back and read your first words out of Webster?
It's about P. Let's see. Where am I at? Here. The emotion evoked by well-being, success, or good fortune, or by the prospect of possessing what one desires. Yeah. Now, see, if you. Now, I think the only thing there is, you know, if you look at it in the end result, like especially this last act, the prospect of possessing what one desires, that's kind of like the psalm about, you know, where the Lord give me what you know, the desires of your heart, or the Proverbs, you know. I mean, well, if your desires are right on, then obviously that fits in with what God's doing. So if you take it that way, it works well. I think that the thing here is that sense of emotion because of good fortune. And I think that's the thing here. We're not saying this is good fortune. The end result may produce it, but the trial, you know, may not be. And I think that's, there was some books when I first became a Christian. It was all this stuff out, The Power of Praise. There are a whole bunch of these little books out at that time. And it's not that you praised God in the midst of the trial. You praised God for it. And I think that's, I don't think that's biblical at all. Because if you press it, you end up praising God for evil. And it was like this deal of, like, you know, I remember this one example, and my daughter's, you know, a prostitute, so I'm going to praise God that she's a prostitute. Because that's how God is going to use that powerfully, you know, and whatever. But I think it's in the midst of her being wayward, can you praise God? Yeah. To me, that's biblical, not because of, but well, anyway, I'm way over time here. We're in extra innings. Huh? Yeah, sudden death. Yeah, it's playoff.
I have a question about verse 1.
Yeah, no, I just kind of mentioned it. Which, James?
To the 12 tribes.
Who are the 12 tribes?
He says, brethren. He says, I greet the 12 tribes who are dispersed. And then that verse 2 begins, brethren.
Well, I just think it's pretty natural, though. And I think we don't see that terminology with Paul, but I think it, I mean, they knew, I mean, you know, God's chosen people are the Jews. And we move in the church age, we understand that there's a distinction. It's not a continuation. But at the same time, you know, when you're writing to those Jews that are dispersed, they are the 12 tribes that are dispersed. They're the true nation, you know, Abraham's children. I don't think that's to be confused with or make the distinction between the church, but I think that, to me, it would be very natural. You keep talking, and I think Hebrews, you know, we see all the written, you know, with, if you don't know the Old Testament, then you can't even read Hebrews, and I think it's the same concept, is that, hey, this is who we are. And I think it's not giving up that past identity. And even, you know, Peter, in defining who a Christian is, he uses all of these passages, you know, that we're priests, we're this, and he just builds and builds and builds upon us being the temple of God. And even that concept of Paul, the temple of God, is, you know, a temple was a building, but yet we become it. So I don't think he's necessarily writing to a nation of, as we'd see it, you know, kind of Jews as opposed to Christians, but I think that becomes just a way of identifying who they are. That, you know, that association that we, hey, this is us. Any prayer requests?